from Directions Magazine. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, January 14th, 2014. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Last week, tech vendors showed their current and future wares to the attendees of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. What's new in location technologies at the show? Could they indicate new trends and potential products for professionals? We'll answer those questions and more after a word from our sponsor.
Natural disasters can deliver sweeping impacts to life and property. Be ready before and after disaster strikes. Harness the raging data torrent across all phases of disaster management. Intergraph's geospatial solutions will help you before the first raindrop falls. See more details at intergraph.com/disaster-management today.
Certainly one of the hot topics at CES was drones or UASs, and you'd think this would be all new and shiny, but I found this little factoid that really puts it in perspective. The first cell phone controlled drone appeared at CES in 2010. That is 4 full years ago. So what could be exciting here in 2014 with drones at CES? And the answer really is one of these things that we're seeing in other technology and other parts of our lives, and that's that we're taking clever things and we're making them smaller. So from a company called Parrot comes the mini drone, which is a palm-sized drone. Yeah, it's got a rotor, but it's also got wheels that you can take off, and it can fly around. You control it with your phone, but it doesn't have a camera, so you can't see what it sees. More interesting, perhaps, from the geospatial technologies user perspective, is something called the Jumping Sumo, which is described as kind of a palm-sized spider, and it does have a camera, so you can actually see where it goes and what it's seeing. So that might be interesting to send into places that you don't want people to go. There might be fumes or flames or something like that. And the other interesting thing about these products, the prices, when they come out, are expected to be under $300. So do you think these are interesting products? Are these toys, or are these going to turn into something real?
That's a really good question. It almost seems like these are pilot projects. These are demonstrations of possible technologies in the future. Whether they're marketable in the professional realm, I think we've got a ways to go. It just seems like is let's put a couple of technologies together, see if it works, and show it at CES. I'm not sure they've really demonstrated any utility to some of these products.
And that was a theme that I found reading up on some of the announcements, was that an awful lot of them seemed like we're testing the waters, you know, let's just show them off. There was another drone company called AirDroid, and they showed off their pocket drone on the stage, a TechCrunch stage. And they're not even funded. In fact, the whole goal of launching there was to start a Kickstarter campaign to raise money to fund this thing.
Yeah, right.
So there's a lot of that proof of concept kind of thing. I do think, however, that we're in one of these phases where the toys, or the sort of the consumer uses of these kinds of things, are going to really begin to set expectations for professionals and give them some experience and get them really excited about it, and frankly, get young people excited about the technologies they can go into as they grow up.
Well, and I think that was one of the takeaways for me when I looked at some of the things that were being provided at CES. And if you allow me to start not just talking about the plainly obvious, but the incredibly obvious, I think sensors that provide location and proximity are driving innovations in things like the connected car and the Internet of Things. Location is an important technology and one that is more or less taken for granted, I think, and it's part in the applications or products that we're seeing. It's just kind of the undertone. It's kind of there. It's not necessarily anything special, but it's more or less assumed. And as a corollary to the sensors, I think are the communication pathways that, as a company like Broadcom describes, and I'll quote. They're using low-power chip designs, Wi-Fi access points, Bluetooth low energy, the BLE technology, near-field communications, and other flavors of device-to-device and device-to-network connectivity. And I think that this is what you're seeing come out at CES, are these these communication pathways and sensor technology being embedded into these consumer products.
Right, so that's an underlying technology, but what's the compelling use case? How are we going to get this into people's hands, whether they are consumers or professionals?
Yeah, so Broadcom demonstrated something. There actually was a combination of Broadcom, Verizon, and something called OmniTrail, and it had to do with what they call passive presence. So one of the demonstrations was that if you were to walk into an area, again, think geofencing, and the example was an airport, that it would sense your presence, and it would send you an alert onto your phone. So it would enable carriers like Verizon, which operate massive public managed Wi-Fi networks in hotels and coffee shops and malls and the like, to direct more relevant content tailored to that individual.
Yeah, and I guess as a consumer, I'm scratching my head and saying, what, don't I already have all this with all the Wi-Fi and Foursquare and these things that I'm opting into to people to send me messages? How is this better?
Yeah, it not necessarily better. I think it's, at least what I saw coming together, where it's not a Foursquare providing this. It's the bigger guys, the Broadcoms, the chip providers, the Verizons, the communication companies. So like they're trying to offer their own individual solution. Yeah, there's Foursquare, but here's two of the big communication companies in the world trying to provide a service. Now, I don't know if they've actually got a specific application. I think, again, it was one of these proof of concepts based on their underlying architecture. It almost sounds like they're trying to provide a service to somebody else who wants to build on top of it, like this OmniTrail.
Okay, well, let's move away from proof of concepts to actual things that you will be able to buy very soon that solve an actual known problem. At first, I was very skeptical of this new product from Schwinn, that's right, bicycle company Schwinn, called CycleNav. Because all I can think of is, why? We need another device that's going to be on our handlebars and help us navigate when we're on our bicycles? Well, the answer here, I think, is yes, because this isn't what I just described. It's actually something else. This is an add-on for your phone. That's the way I like to think about it. Your phone does all the locating, and the routes live on your phone, and the phone uses its GPS to see where you are. But what this device does is it sits on your handlebars, and it simplifies the navigation by flashing lights. Either flashes lights that send you to the right or to the left or straight ahead. It does a few other things, but that's...
Wow, idiot lights, essentially.
Well, let's face it. You're out on your bike. You're going 10, 15, 20 miles an hour, 25, if you're super fast. And you've got this route that you're trying to follow. So you've either got a piece of paper close pinned to your bike, which is honestly how I do it when I attach the cue sheet to my bike. But there's so much else going on, and you know, you don't want to get hit by cars, you don't want to get lost, you don't want to run into the other bikes. I mean, there's a thousand other things you have to worry about besides looking at this piece of paper to figure out where to go, and this just simplifies the whole thing. It's really clever. 10-hour battery life. It will speak the directions. Very simplified. Turn left, turn right. It doesn't have any landmarks or anything like that. There's no headphone jack because we want you listening to the sounds of the world so you don't get into trouble. The software itself, you can pick different routes depending on what you're looking for, really hilly, not so hilly, and so forth. And here's the interesting part. If you dig down into this product, when you go to set your route, what is the underlying software and data? It's not the company you would think. It's MapQuest.
Oh, no.
So this
kidding.
Product costs $60. And it solves a real problem, and I'm really excited to see if one of my cycling friends will have one soon.
Fascinating.
And to put this in the context of broader things that we need, either for consumers or for professionals, we're having this problem with too much data, right? I was running the other day with a friend of mine who has a very fancy running watch and a heart rate monitor and all this stuff. And at the end of the run, she says, I have these piles and piles of data, and I have no idea what to do with it. Well, what we really need are these things to compress it all down, give us the important information that we need in a very visual and useful way, and that's exactly what this does.
Right. Yeah, it kind of cuts down the clutter of other things.
And I can imagine people out with their comfort bikes tootling around, you know, senior citizens with this on there, and I can imagine the folks who are going 25 miles an hour who don't want to think about anything else besides going 25 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So go Schwinn. I'm really jazzed about this.
Well, the one product I thought was at least somewhat interesting is the KMS wristband. Now, this is a wearable, which were all the rage also at CMS this year, but it reminded me of a product of long ago being about 2006, where this is a wristband child tracker. What it essentially does is a very simple, small, wrist-worn mobile phone and an integrated GPS that has one button. And it's essentially what they call a panic button. And it dials a series of pre-programmed phone numbers until it gets an answer from a human, and automatically detecting an answer and skipping to the number if it doesn't get an answer. So it has an integrated GPS chip, and the parent or caregiver can track the wear on a map using a website or a smartphone app. And on top of the phone, if you can visualize it, is a V-code, a 2D barcode, which encodes information about the person who's wearing it, their blood type, their allergies, their emergency contact number. You know, of all the things that have come down the pike in the last several years since we've been using GPS technology, everybody seems to be trying to reinvent this one device for the kid tracker. And what came to mind back in the 2006 time frame was a company called Wearify, which had almost exactly the same type of an advice. Well, here we are again, 2014, and another company is trying to promote the child tracking wristband watch phone GPS. Maybe this time somebody will make a commercial success out of it.
Now, is this the one that will also accept incoming calls from these five specific numbers?
I believe what it does is it automatically answers from those numbers.
So if mom calls, it'll automatically
answer.
Go on, and the mom will say, Johnny, are you okay? And Johnny will say, yes, I'm at the playground with my friends.
Right, right.
Now, see, I think while things have changed between 2006, and I do vaguely remember Wearify, and 2014, it sounds like an awful lot of what's happening here is it's been miniaturized and it's been simplified.
Miniaturized to the sense that probably not as much.
It's not as bulky. It's not as annoying.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. Yeah. And simplified, certainly, I love the one button touch. The kid doesn't have to remember any phone number, right? And it will do the automatic tracking. And of course, it doesn't necessarily have to be for a child. It could be anybody.
No, I want my aunt and uncle to have one of these.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. And again, we're in that same challenging space as we are with the drones, as maybe we are with these wearable bands, and that's that there's so many of them out there that for one of them to rise to the top and be the winner is getting harder and harder.
Oh, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a battlefield out there for the wearables.
Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Imagine fusing high-volume, rapidly emerging data sources and outputting actionable information. With Intergraph's geospatial natural disaster management solution, keep your citizens safe and structures secure before and after a catastrophic event. Visit intergraph.com/disaster-management today.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com. You can send us a tweet @directionsmag. Or you can leave a comment where this podcast is posted @Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.